is my solvency date, and I've been able to hang on to it through a lot of adversity, losing 4 jobs along the way and building a house and breaking down in the middle of nowhere and almost getting a credit card. So I've just been lucky enough by the grace of God to be able to hang on to my date for a lot of years. So anyway, so this is about step 8 and 9, and everybody loves step 8 and 9, right? I mean, I was thinking it would be a totally empty audience because nobody wants to think about step 8 and 9. I certainly did when I came into this program. And as we all know, this is a step program. I think it's really easy, certainly for me, to get caught up in the tools and the nuts and bolts and the getting solvent, you know, and the buying things or not buying things. But really, it is a spiritual program. And a lot of my recovery has been about recovery from isolation from other people. That is the biggest prosperity that I've been given. You know, we talk about prosperity being in many, many kinds of prosperity. It's not all about money. Even though money, not being anxious about money, has been the biggest gift of this program, so that I have time and space in my mind not to be worrying all the time, but yet to be able to, you know, actually feel life and connect with other human beings without always being afraid. So anyway, so what I want to talk about in 8 and 9 is about a lot of my disease of debting was about disease of cutting off from other people and other things. And I grew up in a family where I had some trauma. And after that, I felt very angry in my family. I had a lot of anger. And my habit was to cut off from things. The minute I'd have trouble with something, such as a job or another human being, I would just cut off. I would withdraw. I would, you know, move on. And that happened in relationships, but unfortunately also happened in jobs. So when I think about, I just kept leaving jobs without having another job and not worrying or not thinking through, okay, well, how am I going to support myself if I leave this job? And the reason I could do that was because I had a father who had a lot of money. And I used my father like a credit card. A lot of people come into this program, you know, using credit cards a lot. I did use credit card. I did have credit card debt, and I did have other kinds of financial amends I needed to make. But the biggest thing I needed to do was a living amends of stop taking money, stop using my father as my higher power, and start realizing that there is, in fact, a higher power that will take care of me. So what am I looking at here?
It's recording it.
Oh, it's recording it. Okay, thank you. So what happened was I had left yet another job. I was living on my ex-boyfriend's floor. I had no home and no way of making a living when I came into this program. And I met a man who told me about this program, the money program. And the minute I heard about it, I knew that this is the program I needed. Because everybody else around me, my family and other people my own age that I went to school with, were always all moving forward in their lives. But I didn't seem to be able to move forward in my life. I just kept screwing up, and I kept going back to not having a job, not having money, going back to my family for money, that kind of thing. And when I came into this program, there was a scissor on the desk. I went to a meeting in downtown Boston. It was my first EA meeting. And the scissor was to cut up your credit cards. And I think in a way that was my first living amends, was cutting up those cards and believing that, you know, I was terrified to do that. I was terrified to cut up those credit cards. But the bigger terror was when I decided to cut up a check for my father. My PRG group told me I couldn't take money from my father any longer. So, like I said, even though I didn't have credit cards, thank you. Great, that's what I was looking for. Even though I didn't have credit cards, I was still dependent on my dad. Now, I was in my 20s at the time. It would be worse if I was still dependent upon him at 65, but I did get out of being dependent on him through step 8 and 9. So So I remember I had a check. It was a $1,000 check, and I put it in front of my altar. I had a place that I meditated, and I made a decision to be willing to make this living amends and no longer live out my dependency on my dad. And it was, I started having panic attacks, which I had never had before. And in those panic attacks, they say in the big book about step 8 and 9 being the beginning of a major transformation in your life. That's when the promises come in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And for me, when I put down the credit cards and when I put down my dependency on my dad's money, after all the anxiety I went through for a couple of days and panic attacks, what happened was like this spiritual experience came in. And I realized that I had to completely trust God. I had to completely trust the universe that I was going to be taken care of, that it was going to be okay. And it's never left me since that day. I see other people. I had a friend that never could let go of her dependency on a family member. And I kept saying, you're not going to believe what's underneath that. You're never going to get that if you don't let go. And when I let go, it was like, ever since then, I've had this feeling, because I've been through a lot of really difficult situations. Like I said, lost jobs, been living, paycheck to paycheck at times, although I generally have a prudent reserve now that I can rely upon. But I always believe that if I'm not going to debt one day at a time, if I do whatever it takes to make that happen, I will in fact be taken care of. And for 34 years, that has been the case. And I still say to myself, I can't believe it. I don't have a lot of money. I know people that have a whole lot more money than I have. But for whatever reason, one day at a time, I continue to be taken care of financially, spiritually. The other part of step 9 for me was reconnecting with family members who my pattern was to cut off from people and from jobs. So my sister's here at the conference with me, and this is the second time we've traveled together, which is a 12-step miracle for me, because I hated her. We were cut off from each other for 20 years until I got into the 12 steps. And in this program, I was able to, I guess you'd say forgive her, but it was more like not get so deeply affected by her behavior. It was stopping taking things personally, stopping comparing myself with her and her successes, because she never had this problem. She, for whatever reason, she is not a debtor. Even to this day, when we go downtown, she's just very easy about money. She's easy about giving it away, and she's easy about earning it. She's like, she seems to just stay in jobs, like 30, she's been in the same job for 15 years. She doesn't have major dramas with people. She doesn't, it just seems like life's easy for her. And for a long time, I resented that, and I couldn't open my heart to her and forgive myself. It was more about forgiving myself, really, than forgiving her. And now I can be with her and really enjoy that she's prosperous, really appreciate that she has this way of being that I just have never been able to be. I need all these programs to help me be kind of normal. She doesn't need that. But we have a wonderful relationship today, because I was able to take steps in this program with the help of all of you to start to meld that relationship again. And I did do a direct amends with her as well. So I have done some really direct amends, but more I'm thinking today about the living amends that were way more powerful and important in my recovery. So with that, I will pass the baton to Diane. Thank you.
everybody. My name is Dion. I am a grateful recovering compulsive debtor, and my solvency date is April 15th, 2018. And I am the representative from the Park Slope Tools Monday Zoom meeting. Hi.
Hi,
I'm grateful to be here. So grateful to be talking about this. And, you know, basically, okay, so, you know, I thought it was all about money when I first came in. I needed money. Like, everybody was like, it's not about the money. Because I first came in, even though my solvency today is like four years and a half ago, I've been in here since 97 or whatever. People started to 12-step. People would hear me at other meetings talking about things that related to money difficulties. And I had two people come up to me after those meetings in an unsolicited way and say to me, one guy goes, hey, man. And they always look the same. They look like... They heard my share, and they knew they had some news to deliver. So they were like, dude. And one guy, in for another meeting, another fellowship, he said, I go to this, you know, meeting to stay sober, and then I go to this other meeting I'm telling you about right now to improve the quality of my sobriety and my life. I said, all right, that makes sense. And I went to a meeting, and I was sort of in the pre-contact phase with DA. And people were in a room talking about money, and honestly, and I was like, I was leaning over in the chair like this, and I left at the break. I was trying to cut off my spinal cord from totally feeling all my feelings, because I couldn't take that people were talking about money in a room. So they gave a break, I left at the break, and I didn't come back until another dude came up to me after a meeting, because apparently what was happening, I was so fogged out, I don't know, I can't tell you 100% what I was saying, but I was talking about money and worries about money, whatever. A guy comes up to me after another meeting, and I was talking to someone else, after being in fellowship, guy just puts his hand on my shoulder, very sort of like a holy man, and he goes, you know, there's a place for people like us. I thought he was gonna break into song. I didn't know what was gonna happen. But he told me about it, and I went. And oh my God, it was painful. So painful to go with these. Because people that know about money and that are good with money or come from money, that was not me. I grew up in a trailer park in America, which is a punchline for poverty in America, a trailer park. It's a punchline for like hurricanes and poverty. And there I was. I mean, like for example, like I lived in a single wide trailer. And my grandparents lived in a double wide across the street, you know, a fancy double wide. To me, people that were rich were people that had like Dixie cups in the bathroom, you know, those little paper throwaway cups. And I'd go in and I'd be like, man, these people got money to burn, you know, because they're just throwing paper cups away. Okay, good. So that was it. And then I ran away from home. You know, I grew up and did a bunch of stuff. And I ran away from home when I was 17. So this is where my stuff took me, by myself, on the streets, run away from home, stole money to run away from home, 17, and I'm living 3,000 miles away from home, and I had no clue that I had a disease that was driving things, and I wronged a lot of people along the way. You know, I was in the Army for 4 years, I served our country in the Army for 4 years, and I traveled all over with that, but that's like, you know, I was risking my life. Talk about an under-earning situation. You get X number of $1,000s a year, and the only cost is your life, you know, possibly. And I was, you know, just doing whatever I could, bouncing around, trying to, you know, survive. And then I found a 12-step program. Came back to New York City, found a 12-step program. And then everything started. And then the things I just told you about being 12-stepped into that. So if you have this kind of, if you're like me, what I did was I separated myself from the human community at about the age of 8. And I started going into fantasy with television. I'm going to be famous, doing different voices, doing different stuff, substances. But the base thing that was happening was I was cut off from other people. And that's how I wanted it. When the pandemic happened and it started to become clear what life was going to be like, I had no problem with it. I was like, wait a minute, no one's touching me, no one's coming near me, no one's bothering me, I'm all by myself, I love this. Whenever I would watch movies, I was an isolator, that's what I'm saying. 5 minutes, thank you. I was an isolator, and it was killing me. I would watch movies about prison. I've never been to prison, never had that particular, you know, blessing or experience. But I would see people in solitary confinement. They would say, you go into the hole, Clancy. And I'd be like, wait a minute. They put you in a room where nobody bothers you and you get food? I could never understand it. People would say, that's the worst thing you can do to a person is completely isolate them. And yet I had lived that way for 30 plus years or whatever. I'm 52. I know I don't look it, but that don't say it. 52 now. So I lived a lot of time around people, hanging out with folks, doing stuff, but nobody knew me. So one of the big amends, okay, look, there were like overt sins that I did and had to make up for and had to go to people about. But there were also sins of commission. But there were also sins of omission. I wasn't fully involved in people's lives. I didn't bring myself to relationships and friendships. A lot of my amends that I go to make are, I wish I had been a better friend. And then leaving the conversation open for maybe there'll be a possibility to be a good friend, you know, if they want that. So some specific amends that I've made over the years, which I don't know, I thought you might want to hear about. One was, which one should I tell first? Okay, so one was, it was in another fellowship, but it was still very important to me. I went to... Okay, I grew up with a friend. I got him in a lot of trouble because I was trouble. And if you hung out with me, I was trouble. And I got scapegoated a lot because I was a big mouth and a ringleader. You know, as my mom always called me the ringleader. You're the only one whose voice I can hear. And so I felt really bad about that. I came back to my neighborhood after running away, after going to the army. And I came back and I went to go apologize to a friend of mine's dad for having been such a bad influence on his son. And I was terrified of this guy, this father. He was a command sergeant major in the army and all this stuff. And I was walking over to his door to go do the amends. This would have been 98, summer of 98. And he was sitting, just to give you a visual, he looked like Andrew Jackson off the $20 bill. That's what his dad looked like. And he was sitting on the porch with no shirt on. And I was so terrified. I mean, I was terrified. It's one of the first ones that I'm making. And I go up and I say, you know, sorry that I was a bad influence on your son and this and another thing, and I'm kind of working this program, I'm trying to... And he was just like this, he was just like shaking his head like this. He goes, don't worry about that. That was a long time ago. And it really wasn't that long ago, but to him it was water under the bridge. And I cannot even tell you, I don't know what I expected him to do. I expected death because it was the unknown. Going back to people who I was sure hated me. See, what I had done for years was just ignored if I thought they hated me, I just ignored it because you weren't going to get me down. I wasn't going to check in and find out what was really going on. I wasn't going to dare to hope that it would be something maybe I could change or reapproach relationships. This program has taught me all of that is possible. It's possible to go back and, okay, so I apologize to this guy. I would come back to my parents' backyard and they're all having eating out on a picnic table. And he never, except to report on bad things I did, never came to our house, this guy that I just made the amends to. He comes walking over. He's got his face over the fence. His wife is with him. And I realized something at that point. He wanted more contact. Thank you. 1 minute. He wanted more contact with me, it seemed, on the surface, but it was with the program. He wanted more of whatever it was we had just experienced. That was not the way my life had run before that. Another amends. I'll get this in here before the time goes. We've got 40 seconds. So a buddy of mine, he was in program. We're both in showbiz, okay? He's in program. I'm in program. He wanted to make amends to me. I had had enough of his crap. I wasn't going to have an appointment with him. So I deprived him of a meeting. Then they got a big TV show, him and his group. And they got a big TV show. So I wrote to him. I said, man, I said, I really wish, we're both comedians. So it's like, I really wish I would have been nicer to you back when you wanted to make that amends. So you put me on your TV show. And he laughed and he loved it. And I really acknowledged later in the email, I just reread it today, that I know I had a lot of character defects. And I'm really sorry for the ways that those impacted you negatively. and we had a great rapport. And he said, as soon as this zombie apocalypse is over, let's get together and hang out. So there's always more to say. There's always lots more stories. But I can just say that the ability to reconnect with people, I thought, was absolutely impossible. And I had no idea that all the money stuff was connected to being able to have relationships with other people. Thank you.
Yeah, hi everybody, my name is Ellen, and I'm a compulsive debtor, and I have not incurred any new unsecured debt since September 21st of 2002, and my home meeting is Solvency Today and Every Day in New York City and on Zoom. So anyway, hi everybody, sorry, I wanted to remember to get that out because that's one of my things.
Hi.
I want to thank the speakers. They were great setting the stage and talking, and they're sharing their experience, strength, and hope. Also, I want to thank the committee, the London group. They've just been awesome, totally, totally awesome. Everything has been just the best that you can imagine. So it's really a wonderful World Service Conference and will be a tremendous memory for me after tomorrow. So anyway, step 8 and step 9, it was so funny when I was emailed about it, I thought the two most unsexiest steps that there are 8 and 9, you know, but right away I, you know, step 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. You know, I used to talk about the dangling participles in the program, the grammar, and you know, I was speaking once on the 8th step a while ago, and we had a big discussion of why there were two alls at the end of that step, why it was make amends to them all and all again. And it came, the discussion, you know, we talked about, because I had talked about, do you put yourself on the list? Because it's, you know, 8's about making a list. I'm kind of a practical, even though it doesn't ever seem like that, I'm very practical and pragmatic about these things. So, you know, it's about making a list. It's not, that's all it's about. And usually comes from step 4. You know, making the list is part of it. But if you're like me, you have a knack for making more step 8s as you get more time in the program. And so I'll just give you a little bit about what qualifies me to be here. And it's really hard in 10 minutes. But at any rate, I have to say I grew up very abundantly on the ocean in a part of New York City that's a peninsula. And I do have to mention for my recovery that I have sexual abuse from when I was 6 years old. And it's a big part of my story. My father died when I was 6 from alcoholism. And from my father's death, the anthem of the family was, we must regain the family image. We've got to get the money back. That was the anthem of my family. So I had a real twist in my story that when I was 20, I was, quote unquote, what they used to call seen, and I became, to just net it out, I became an international model, and I lived in Paris. And that informed my lifestyle because I was like ready for it. Yeah, I was, there was nothing I could say that I disliked about that period of time. But I had some reality come along. My mother got terminal cancer, so I went home to take care of her, and then I went into the business world. But you know, I always say if I knew that I was going to have peaked in my early 20s, I would have taken much more advantage of it then, because it was just like downhill into addiction all the way into a mental hospital. So this downward spiral, when they talk about downward spirals, I'm like, yeah, I get downward spirals. I get it, you know. And when I came into recovery, you know, I had lost everything. I lost my apartment on an 18-hole golf course with a view of New York. I lost all the money. I had spent over $1 million. My family at that time wanted nothing to do with me. I was totally on my own, totally on my own. My parents were both deceased. And, you know, recovery So when I saw this, like, make amends, I was thinking, make amends? I need the amends made to me, you know? How did I wind up here? You know, it's all everybody else's issues that got me in here. I'm, you know, I was in whatever. I had, but one thing I did recognize was that I did recognize that it was my choices, even though I felt my choices were informed by a lot of other stuff. Ultimately, I knew that I had to get to my own choices. Thanks, Mike. And so when it came to the, like, eighth step, my sponsor was always very good with me because I'll just say at 15 years sober, somebody passed me a note and said, I think you need Debtors Anonymous. It was because I was living off of my credit line. I thought my credit line was my bank balance. So at any rate, with the, you know, you see, with DA, me, has been the experience of getting greater clarity. And I often cannot see the relationship that my actions have a cause and effect. And that's what I've really studied maybe the past 15 years is cause and effect. And I made some notes here. I left everything back in New York, so I'm totally whatever. And at any rate, what I was taught to do with step eight was you made your list and talked to everybody about it, because usually everybody all knows about it, your list, because you're all talking about it. And make three different piles, those that you want, that are easy to make, those that you're a little bit more resistant but may happen, and those you never want to do. And that's how I learned to do it, and that's how the evolution of my, I think it says, like in the DA book, I'll just say, quote this, if we were trapped in selfishness, dishonesty, fear, or resentment, we had resources on which we could rely. We could speak about our desire for willingness in meetings with our sponsor, pressure relief group, or in prayer. That's on page 37, 12, 12, and 12. And I think that that's really true, you know, because when we get to nine, the mechanic, the doing nine is, the DA step book has a lot of information about all the feelings around doing nine. But I, like I said, I've had different sponsors. DA was my fifth program, so my third sponsor in DA, we did an amends where I had been in acting class and I embarrassed my friend. Now, I didn't realize I embarrassed my friend until we got into the subway station and she started yelling at me. And then I realized I had done something awful and she had stomped off and she wouldn't speak to me. And we were very close. We were very close for many years. And So I was really concerned, and I wanted to develop it, because she wouldn't talk to me when I saw her places, and she wouldn't even come, nothing. So at any rate, I was discussing this with my sponsor, and what I did was, I went to my acting teacher, and I said, I understand when neither of us are registered in class, because I always like to know how people do things. I went to him, and I said, can we come back and do our scene again? And I explained to him the whole deal. And he was like, oh, I love this, yes. So then, but then I had to get to her, who wasn't talking to me. So it took me probably almost 2 years of communicating on a very gentle level, dropping a message, sending an email, sending a card in the mail, offering to take her out when we were going out, like, so we meet on an audition or whatever. And eventually she said, yes, I'll meet you for lunch. So we went to lunch, and I was sick. I didn't know what to expect, because I knew the potential for the fangs. So just let's say I knew what could happen in this, and my mind was, and my sponsor said, just show up, right, and take the action. The result is in God's hands. So I remember, I'll never forget sitting there, and I said to her, I'm so sorry. I just, I'm so sorry. And she just, thanks, Mike. I said to her, I'm sorry. And she said to me, and she just cried. And I just sat there and was just awed. I mean, I just didn't know what to do. And I just let her cry. And I let her say what she wanted to me, which is not like, you know, the best of Ellen. But she said what she said. which encompassed, I think, the last 20 years of our relationship, she let me know about. And then we never spoke about it again. It was just gone. And I have always found my events to be like that, you know, when I've had to make them. But to me, that was most illustrative one, because I was cold stone sober when I had to do that. You know, I didn't have anywhere to escape in any other of my many activities to escape, you know. So with that, I'll say thank you very much for listening, and I think we're done.